Coming soon to a theater near.
I'm Michael Clark, and he's Mike Pereira, and we like talking about movies. And we're going to, with local guests and experts about the art, technology, and cultural impact of filmmaking. On today's episode, we're talking with Anna Beard about holiday movies. We know when they've been bad or good, so let's discuss, for goodness sake.
And now, on with the show.
Oi.
I think it's really important for Anna to know what she's getting into right at the beginning of the episode, because, you know, it gives her ample opportunity to just, no, don't walk away, please. I don't want to have to discuss holiday movies on my own.
The Zoom equivalent of the, oh no, I'm going into a tunnel, oh, I can't hear you, is, oh, I have an unstable connection, I need to log off. Anna Beard is a digital marketer by day and a river otter video connoisseur by night. She's worked in and around KW for over a decade, but you've probably seen her riding the rails between the University of Waterloo and the Kitchener Market stations. A true 90s kid, she's still a fan of the Cranberries, knit vests, Nintendo, and crushed tahini treat. Her truest loves are coffee, municipal politics, and her six-year-old golden retriever, Oliver. And I feel like, for full disclosure, she is also my fiance, which the fact that I didn't make the list of her truest loves might be a little telling. But Anna, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here and talk about holiday films.
I'm super excited about it. So as we do on every episode, we always ask a couple of random questions that don't really have anything to do with the theme. So as was brought up in the introduction, you have a dog and you love dogs. And I was curious, do you have a favorite animal or a favorite movie that involves like dogs or a dog?
No.
Or another animal?
I refuse to watch that. Largely because the dog usually dies. And I am the type of dog owner who puts all of my emotional energy into my dog.
Right.
And as a result, my dog is largely, you know how like people have like emotional support dogs?
Yeah.
And I am my dog's emotional support person in that he is emotionally supporting me. and not in a like something has happened, but more in like a day-to-day life sort of situation. Yeah. And there will be times, and I remember one meeting in particular when we were still in the office, and this would have been just after I started in my current role. And I walked in, so it would have been late 2017, sat down, was in the middle of having a conversation with a colleague of mine, thought about my dog dying, and burst into hysterical crying. And she was like, is everything okay? And I was like, everything's fine. You don't need to worry. I just randomly thought about my dog dying. And she was like, I don't know what that has to do with this current situation that you're in. And I was like, oh no, it just doesn't have anything to do with it at all. Just without him, I'm slightly emotionally unstable. So I don't watch dog films or films where dogs are like the main character because of this. Case in point, we were watching a movie that had Keanu.
Oh, I suggested that we watch John Wick because Anna quite likes the Matrix movies. And I thought, hey, I bet she would really like the John Wick trilogy, forgetting that the whole reason that series exists is at the beginning his dog dies in a very gratuitous way, and we got all of 5 minutes into that film and
it wasn't a good look.
We turned it off and we put it in the freezer box and we have not returned to it.
I suggest going the other way, which is somebody made a great YouTube video called Dog Wick where it's the guy who dies and the dog goes on a killing spree. It's like a little Scottish terrier running around with a handgun in its mouth just killing people.
Oh, I'm here for that.
And I was like, this is like the thing that I'm here for. It's pretty hilarious. The last question, which is a good segue into our topic, which is, do you have a favorite non-Christmas holiday movie?
A non?
You know, so like those movies Christmas that like fit, holiday they're movie. Like a holiday type movie, but like it's not specifically about Christmas.
Like a winter holiday or just like any holiday?
You interpret it as you see fit.
Oh, this is a good one. Nothing is immediately springing to mind. I think all of the creativity for something like this was sucked out by Nightmare Before Christmas because it talks about every holiday in a small amount. What would you answer to those that question?
Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to think of, I mean, like if we're going with like movies about other holidays, you could, you know, I don't know. I was actually oddly fond of the movie Hop about the Easter Bunny. Who wants to be a drummer instead of an Easter bunny, which I thought was kind of cool. Yeah. You know, and then, yeah, I was trying to think about that. Like one that I always liked, and I'm still not totally clear why. I have a lot of movies that I watch a lot that I'm not even totally sure why I like them, but Serendipity would maybe fall into that category. Cause it feels a bit like a Christmas movie, but it's sort of set at Christmas, but it's not specifically about Christmas per se.
That's one of those movies that like spans a good chunk of time. So it could check several boxes.
Serendipity, the one thing I like it. It's got, you know, Jeremy Piven's in it, has a great little role. But I love Eugene Levy's thing as like the guy, you know, no, you can't come behind the counter.
Yeah.
Don't step away from the counter, like the neurotic shop guy.
That was that era when Levy wasn't a lead in movies anymore, but he would come in and do 10 minutes and just like elevate the whole thing. And then he was gone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. My answer to this question is the animated movie Rise of the Guardians, which is not a great movie, but it features the like mythological creature for every holiday. So Hugh Jackman plays the Easter Bunny. I think Alec Baldwin plays Santa Claus, and he has naughty and nice tattooed on his forearms, and he's like this giant Russian guy. And it's about all of the holiday creatures like ganging up to defeat like the abstract concept of darkness. And that's a good. It's not about any of the holidays in particular. It is completely irreligious. Doesn't have anything to do with any of the holidays that those creatures exist around. It's just them as concepts being action heroes.
Was that a Zack Snyder movie? Or am God, I confusing I that with something not. Else?
No, that was the Owls movie, which has a very, very similar title.
Right, yeah.
And they came out, I think, within like 3 months of one another, which didn't help either of their box offices.
Okay, yeah, because I was totally being, I was, when you said Rise of the Guardians, I was like, oh, the movie about the owls. But it was I think it was Legend of the Guardians or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you could see why one might.
Anyways. They're both fairly generic titles.
All right. So holiday movies, what do you, I don't know. Does anybody have I have a bunch of questions and things. I have like 2 pages of notes.
I think that, it's of interest, at least to Anna and I, and maybe not to any of our listeners, that our relationship is largely due to holiday movies. In that one of the things that we first bonded over was the holiday special, The Muppet Family Christmas. Which yes. is a TV special, not a movie, but is perhaps one of the greatest pieces of filmmaking ever. Yes. If only because it's the only time that the Muppets, the Sesame Street Gang, and the Fraggles are on the screen at the same time. But then our first date was to see Home Alone at Shortfinger.
Oh, that's a really cute story, though. I love that. And the fact that you guys bonded over holiday movies is really cool because like holiday movies are awesome. So maybe I'll start with, you know, you ran I don't want to say it was a Twitter poll exactly, but you put out a call for like, hey, people on Twitter, tell me about your favorite holiday movies. Were there any surprises that came back where you were like, oh, say what?
Less surprises and just more movies that I have never stinking heard of. The one where everybody was like, oh my God, yes, somebody, what the hell is The Ref?
the ref is like a really weird. So it's Dennis Leary is like a thief who breaks into a house to commit a robbery, but it's like Kevin Spacey and I forget the actress. But they're basically like a married couple who are heading for a divorce, and he gets sucked into like the drama of their marriage and ends up basically like being their marriage counselor. But it's all set over the holidays, and so like this movie is like basically a guy who tries to rob a house ends up getting sucked into being a marriage counselor, and then the couple kind of cover for him.
Interesting. Okay, so this falls into the category of holiday films that is contentious holiday films.
Yeah, I've got a whole thing on that one.
Because I imagine that further down the line, we will have the Die Hard discussion.
We have to get there, but I figured we'd build.
I have a lot of fiery feelings, but somebody did kind of school me on my butt a couple of years ago about my personal perspective. So it's changed over time. But okay, we'll get there. I am definitely impressed with how many other millennial women were like, oh, Care Bears Christmas. Yeah, Care Bears Nutcracker. Yeah, 100%. I have been trying to find that on YouTube or on DVD or something for the last couple of years because it is just so good and I can't, which is really sad.
I feel like our generation was specifically targeted by having a holiday special for every TV show that was in any way successful at selling toys. Like all the Saturday morning cartoons had Christmas specials and they were usually supersized and they were special events and they only aired once a year. And you'd think that something like Care Bears would only have traction for a couple years, but they, even if Care Bears stopped airing, they would throw that special on every December because they had it in their repertoire and they had the license.
Yeah, it's so good.
Oh yeah, man. I grew up watching like the Care Bears movies, the original ones. I saw them in the theater, and you know, I for some reason we had the second one on VHS, like we had taped it off TV. So I've seen the second Care Bears movie like a ton of times. Do you have a favorite Christmas movie?
Do I have a favorite Christmas movie? Oh my god!
Or holiday movie?
I mean, like to me in the childhood that I have, most holiday movies are Christmas movies. That is kind of the experience that I had kind of, you know, growing up. But back to kind of what we had talked about earlier is Muppet Family Christmas is my favorite Christmas film. I will always call it a Christmas film. To me, it was a Christmas film. I don't care if it is a Christmas special or what it was. It had all of my favorite things in it. It had the Muppets. It had Muppet Babies. It had the Fraggles. It had the Sesame Street Gang. And I just remember the first time I was watching it and I had the Muppet Baby yogurt.
Oh yeah, in my head. I remember that.
And I got a Muppet Baby yogurt and I got to watch it and it was everything. So has always been a thing. I watch it every year. That is like a tradition that I have always kept. And then you have like your classic Christmas films. Things like National Lampoon's, things like Home Alone, things like OG Grinch, and then like that CBC lineup that you would always get on Christmas Eve or the day before, like on the 23rd of December, that had Grinch, Frosty Returns, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and Rudolph. And if I don't watch those, it's really hard for me to feel like Christmas actually came or like
Christmas
was a thing. And I don't know how much of that is just like childhood imprinting versus the quality of the content. Cause I mean, let's be honest, it's good, but it's not that great. But then you have something like White Christmas, which is to me, not entirely a Christmas film. It's called White Christmas. It happens around Christmas, but the storyline has absolutely nothing to do.
Well, and Christmas is really only in the final reel of that film. Like most of it actually doesn't take place. Like it's kind of leading into Christmas, but like,
yeah,
most of it is sort of not about Christmas. I would agree.
So there's that. It's a Wonderful Life is always a good Christmas classic, especially if you care to be quite depressed. Like some of us enjoy a little sadness at our holiday time, to each their own. Mickey's A Christmas Carol, definitely on the list of things that I like to watch. I actually, fun fact, didn't see Muppet Christmas Carol until going over to Michael's to sit and watch Muppet Christmas Carol for like part of, this was before also we started dating. That was a like, hey, Twitter friend, we're gonna watch this movie that you've never seen before. And I was like, yeah. And then we watched the film.
It's because aside from any other part of human communication, if I find it that somebody has not seen a movie that is good, all of my energy becomes make them see this movie.
Love it. It's like a holiday special in of its own self.
Exactly.
Right there, really. Yeah. Every time someone brings up the Muppet Christmas Carol, I immediately think of Scrooged, just because it's,
yeah,
it's basically the same storyline.
Yeah.
But
yeah. But this gets me to a question I had, and for everybody, is that there are 1,000 different versions of A Christmas Carol, and everybody has very specific tastes in which version of The Christmas Carol is their version. What is your go-to adaptation? Because it's, I think I looked it up once, and there's pretty much one new adaptation every year and a half when you average it out. I think the last major one was the Zemeckis one where Jim Carrey played all the characters in horrifying motion capture. But what is your go-to Christmas Carol?
Mine is definitely the Mickey one. Mickey's A Christmas Carol. Not Mickey's Christmas Carol, but Mickey's A Christmas Carol. Largely because that's the first version of it that I watched as a kid. But now, if I had to pick, that would be cut. Like, Mickey's A Christmas Carol would come in solidly at number two, because A Muppet Christmas Carol, I don't know that there is a better version.
I read a thing once that said that Dickensian experts consider it to be one of the best adaptations, because it's one of the only ones that incorporates the like the narration from the novel throughout, because they have Gonzo as playing Dickens.
You were going to say that it's the only one that includes a song by Statler and Waldorf.
Oh, I mean, that's also true. It's also the only adaptation that correctly has Bob Cratchit portrayed by a frog, as is explicitly written in the original Dickensian text.
Yes, I believe that is canon.
Yeah,
I think mine would be Scrooge. I think the first time I ever saw A Christmas Carol though was the Jetsons version of it, if I remember right, and that one I've seen a bunch of times because for some reason I had the Jetsons Christmas Carol on VHS.
That's a solid pull. I saw it the other day. Apparently, I did not know this. The Jetsons takes place in 2048, and someone calculated that George Jetson should be conceived anytime
right around now. Yeah,
it'll be like a Back to the Future too, like, you know, the future looks all promising and then we get there and we're like, it's pretty much the same. There are no flying cars and self-lacing shoes
at this point. I wouldn't trust self flying cars.
No. I do appreciate though the old, like the original Christmas Carol, like the black and white one from like kind of the 30s or 40s or whatever.
The Alistair Sim.
Yeah. That's actually like, I remember watching that and being like, you know, I don't know if it won't trump Scrooged for me, because Bill Murray telling someone to staple antlers on a mouse is just like, you really just get the sense of his callousness in that one line.
I remember the first time I watched Scrooged, it was on the recommendation of a friend in school, and he pitched it to me as A Christmas Carol, but Scrooge doesn't really change at the end. Like, he changes a little bit, but like not as much as some other Scrooges. And I'm like, okay, I'm intrigued. I watched it, and I'm like, I don't know if that's necessarily the takeaway from this film, but you know, he's still a little schmarmy. So
just watching, who was it though? Carol. Oh, who, who plays the one ghost? I think the ghost of Christmas
Carol Present. Kane.
Carol Kane, where she socks him in the face with the toaster.
Yeah.
And does it with like this, like dressed as a fairy and be like, wee-hee! And just like, come on. So
great. Bobcat Goldthwait chasing him around the office with a shotgun doing the Bugs Bunny impersonation. My go-to version of A Christmas Carol is the George C. Scott, which was never released theatrically. It was a CBS made-for-TV movie, but it's George C. Scott as Scrooge, David Warner as Cratchit, and it's just like loaded with a bunch of British 80s character actors. But it's really dark and menacing in a way that a lot of other adaptations aren't. It feels the most like a ghost story of any of them. It feels less like A Christmas Story and more like a ghost story, which, as my understanding is, that's what Dickens wanted. Dickens had this whole thing where he's like, I want Christmas to be about ghosts, and that didn't really pan out.
It's almost like a Nightmare Before Christmas, right? It's like Tim Burton is like, well, we're going to sort of do a Christmas thing, but a Halloween thing too. And it's going to be like, it's going to be a little hard to pin down.
I love it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm very curious to know though, we're talking about, you know, you brought up the classic Grinch. Mm. Do you have like, which Grinch is the best Grinch? Or is that... Is that an unfair question?
No, I don't think it's an unfair question. I think it's a, for me, it's a tie, and it depends on how much time I have.
I think we've got time.
No. When I am consuming, it depends on how much time I have. So
I thought we were going to get a rant, like a toast level.
I don't need to talk at a toast level. for me, it's either going to be the OG cartoon or the Jim Carrey version with Baby Taylor Momsen. Because if I want to sit and like watch a film, I will watch the version with Jim Carrey. If it is part of the CBC holiday lineup, then I want the cartoon version, because that is, you know, the perfect thing to have just before you then tuck into Frosty and Frosty Returns and then do Rudolph. You can't do them kind of like all over the place willy-nilly, and you should never do the cartoon Grinch on its own. It's not proper.
I agree, because there was that lineup, right? Like you'd settle in for an evening and it would be like, you know, you've got the Grinch, you've got Rudolph, you've got Frosty. We always skip Frosty Returns because I just...
But what about the Let There Be Snow song?
Yes, it does exist.
It's so good. Oh, everything about Frosty Returns is so good. Let There Be Snow, the voice acting, who I actually forget the person who does... Frosty's voice in Frosty Returns.
John Goodman, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. I knew it was one of the Johns.
And Jonathan Winters as the narrator, which that was during his weird mid-90s resurgence.
Who is just sort of like apparently like a Midwestern trucker riding around on a snowflake.
Yeah.
Like nothing particularly Christmassy. He's just kind of got like a hunting vest and a baseball cap.
Yeah.
Like, who are you again?
He's just
very Midwest.
Yeah.
But I will say what I do love about that one is the villain, because I love Brian Doyle Murray.
Yes.
He should voice every sort of cartoony evil character.
What I did just discover in my quick Google is that Lorne Michaels was the executive producer on Frosty Returns.
Wow.
Which seems like a very strange connection.
And doesn't necessarily inform why any of the rest of those people were cast in it. Like if it's Lorne, you'd expect it to have some SNL connection.
Well, Brian Doyle Murray is Bill Murray's brother.
That's maybe.
That's the like the loosest of connections, but that's all I got.
So I haven't seen the Benedict Cumberbatch Grinch that came out a couple years ago. Have either of you seen the new feature length animated Grinch movie? Because some people on your thread went to bat for it.
I haven't. It's really good. Like, I mean, it's what I would say it's really consistent with Illumination's kind of stuff. So if you're a fan of like Despicable Me, and the Lorax stuff, like there's a really like I don't know if it's Pharrell, but it's got a very hip hop kind of driven soundtrack. So they sort of are like, we're going to kind of abandon a lot of the, like a good chunk of the sort of like style of the other two and do something that's still the Grinch, but it's more unique and it's more contemporary and it's willing to let go of some stuff. So like, you know, the narrator, it has more of like a hip hop style narration. And it actually really, at first I was like, I don't like this. It's different. Where's Boris Karloff?
Right.
But then I just sort of like went with it. I was like, oh, this is actually a really great film. And what it kind of left me with was all of them are really good. They're just all, they're each of their era, right? Like they're all three are like very of their era takes on the same story. That couldn't happen in another era. Like you couldn't have any of them really work in, you know, like the 60s one couldn't be made today because just the way, like it just wouldn't have come together that way. And the Jim Carrey one could not have been made before or after in the same way. And the same way with the new one, like I actually think it's quite good and it's quite funny. And like, you know, it's really worth watching.
That I love about both the Grinch and something like, A Christmas Carol is that you have in both, they're essentially the same story, because you have this crotchety person who is like enveloped with the spirit of Christmas and it changes their ways and they, you know, wake up the next morning and they're, you know, completely revolutionized in their perspective on life. And you really wish that Christmas was a thing that could actually happen and cause real change. But unfortunately, we're just not quite there yet. But I'm going to keep hoping because I believe in it.
The surest evidence that there are no such thing as ghosts is that Jeff Bezos has went to sleep every Christmas Eve and has woken up Jeff Bezos instead of savior of humanity.
Yeah. You know,
people I don't know. Did he have like a business partner, though, who was going to come back? I don't know. I think that's the key thing.
Whoa. Right? What about his wife? She'd
need to die, which I don't want because she's paying billions of dollars to charity. So
that's true.
Can she's we keep not... Mackenzie?
Yeah, she's the good one. She's
Yeah.
But again, you know, we don't need to reform her. You know what? If it's going to happen to anyone, what's going to happen is like, you know, either Elon Musk or Peter Thiel, one of the PayPal founders, is going to die and then haunt the other one.
Right.
Which I'd be okay with.
Yeah, same.
But yeah, no, I thought they were good. But this kind of gets me to another question that I was gonna ask you guys, which is like, what are the key ingredients? Because there are controversial ones, and I want to get to this, you know, the Die Hard thing, but other controversial Christmas films. But what are the key ingredients of a good holiday movie? Like, what makes it a holiday movie aside from the obvious? Well, it's about Christmas in some way, but like, what are the key things? Because ostensibly when we get to Die Hard, there are strong arguments. And so I'm curious to know, like, what are the things that kind of make it a holiday movie as opposed to maybe a movie that just happens to happen at the holidays? Cause I don't think Iron Man 3 is a Christmas movie. It just, it's a movie that kind of just happens or to be around Christmas.
And I think that's the argument that can be made because Shane Black, who wrote and directed Iron Man 3, all of his movies take place at Christmas. So with a couple exceptions, but Lethal Weapon takes place at Christmas. The Long Kiss Goodbye takes place at Christmas. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang takes place at Christmas. And in interview, I think even the last Predator movie takes place at Christmas. And when asked about this, he said, I like Christmas because it tends to be a time when people are self-reflecting and when people are together. So in terms of having a setting for conflict, and conflict resolution, it offers a lot of dramatic opportunities. But to your point, Mike, that doesn't make it a Christmas movie. It's just using Christmas as narrative fodder.
Yeah, for me, it's like Michael said, like anytime that there are large gatherings of family, magic, obviously, there needs to be snow. And usually, at least one panning shot of something baked.
Mm.
Whether that is a human, whether that is cookies, or it doesn't matter. But there is usually something that is baked. So this is kind of like where the argument about like Die Hard and Home Alone and all that kind of stuff. Because Home Alone, I think we can all agree, like societally agree, that Home Alone is a holiday film. It is about family on a holiday. Takes place at holidays, all that kind of stuff. But if you use those two qualifiers, Die Hard is also a holiday film. It's about family. It takes place at the holidays. I don't enjoy Die Hard. I think it is an okay movie. I am not the target demographic for Die Hard, though, so we can move past that. But using kind of those qualifiers, it has a Christmas tree. There are baked goods. There is snow outside. It counts.
There is an argument. I saw a great argument the other day. I'm trying to find it here, where the arguments that people use to say that Die Hard isn't a Christmas movie. If you use all of the same metrics that are generally used, It's a Wonderful Life is also not a Christmas movie.
Because I would say it's less of a Christmas movie than Die Hard in a lot of ways, because it really has nothing to do with. Yeah. It's just like that final scene happens to it happens to be at a Christmas party. But most of the movie has nothing to do with Christmas, ostensibly. It could have happened in the middle of the summer for all anyone cares. It's just...
The one thing that I forgot to mention that makes things a Christmas movie is high levels of emotion. And I think that is where something like It's a Wonderful Life falls into play, because you have really intense high levels of emotion.
Yeah.
And same sort of thing with even like the Care Bears Nutcracker. High levels of emotion. They're gone on an adventure. It's very exciting. There is a new toy involved. The Care Bears are there. Like, it is hot and it's exciting and people are ready to go. So I think if we include that in our grading matrix, then it's going to be really, it'll be more difficult to discount those fringe things than kind of it ever was before.
Yeah, I think The Holiday is an interesting film, which is a movie I hadn't seen until last year when we watched it. But it's also a movie that is largely considered to be a holiday movie. It takes place in the wintertime. I think maybe at the end they are joined together to celebrate New Year's or something like that. But the rest of the movie does not in any way hinge on it being in December. That movie could just as easily be set around Arbor Day. But I think that it's the overall theme and emotional feelings of the film that make it a holiday film. The other thing when people talk about some holiday films is that some films just we think of them as holiday films because that's when they were repeated on TV. I think that's what mostly happened with It's a Wonderful Life. I think that kind of happened with Wizard of Oz, maybe not so much for our generation, but for the longest time, Wizard of Oz would play on NBC or whatever station it was at Christmas, because that's when the rest of their programming was on hiatus. So they had time blocks to play a movie.
That's why I will always consider The Sound of Music a holiday film.
Same. Like, I was just going to bring that up.
Definitely not, but it always was on CTV at some point in time between Christmas Eve and New Year's Day, because they had no regular programming. Also, because that movie is 18 hours long. And I remember the first time I watched it, I was sitting downstairs with my dad, and the scene where Maria and the captain get married, and they do that pan out from the church after, like during their wedding ceremony. And I was like, that was such a nice way to end the movie. And my dad was like, Oh yeah. Yeah, that movie's real done. That movie's done. Yeah, and then he's like, the movie is over. And then it kept playing, and I was like, oh, is it not done? And he was like, damn it, I didn't move fast enough.
It's, yeah, but I mean, I would agree. And I mean, it's shorter than another one that was often played, less so at Christmas, more at Easter, but often over the Christmas holidays, is the Ten Commandments.
Oh, yeah.
And that thing is like 4 hours long.
I had that on 2-tape VHS.
I actually have the collector's edition on DVD. I've watched that movie probably more times than any other movie.
It's so good.
It's a great film, despite my not loving Charlton Heston as a human being, and also yes, the fact that I'm an atheist. I still watch that movie all the time because there are so many great performances in it. They're like, it's just an epic film in every sense of the word. But but that's another one that I often associate with Christmas because it was always on TV around that time of year. It was probably because it just ate up 4 hours plus commercials.
Did you have like foundational Christmas films or holiday films when you were growing up that like you can think back and like, this was the one that set off all of our holiday traditions or like made it feel really like it was holiday time?
My mom loves the Charlie Brown Christmas. And if she didn't watch anything else, she watched Charlie Brown. But other than that, and we would try, my dad likes the Alistair Sim Christmas Carol. And those were the two things that my parents tried to watch. So I don't think we had a foundational Christmas special, but because I always lean towards the more absurd option and I like annoying people, my holiday tradition was to watch National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation every time it was on, because every single channel played it and they always played it at different times. So as soon as we got the TV guide in the mail for starting in December, I would chart, okay, CTV is playing it on this day. NBC is playing it this day. CBS is playing it on this day. CBC is playing it on this day. And I would stake the TV on those days. And I didn't care how much my sisters complained that this was the third time that we were watching it with commercials. I watched it every single time. One, because I thought that was a funny bit. And two, I liked the movie and I wanted to watch it a whole bunch. And it was the only time that it aired in the course of the year. So I would watch it as many times as I could in 1 month.
It's a level of dedication that I'm really nervous about you bringing into our relationship later on.
You don't have to worry about that because network TV doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, true enough. True enough.
Oh, those were the days. For me, I actually think it was that CBC lineup, right? The Rudolph movie, which is always a little funny to watch with the kids now because it's like, fairly sexist.
Hyper misogynistic and filled with bullying.
Totally. So there's a lot of, but like that, the Frosty, the funny thing was, so we had those all taped on a VHS, and my dad was very into taping things off the TV.
Yep.
And one that was on there, so we had, the lineup, like the CBS, right? So we had the Grinch and then Rudolph and then Frosty. And then right at the end of like those five movies, we had, it was a stop motion animation movie called The Nightingale, The Emperor's Nightingale, which is based off a Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale called The Nightingale about the Emperor of China being given a mechanical jeweled nightingale that he prefers over the real nightingale. And, it has to be like, over the years, as he gets sick, the real nightingale like comes and sings to him and like restores his health, and he learns to appreciate like natural beauty over like mechanical artifice. And I have this thing of, I just associate that as like part of the lineup for me, where I'm like, yeah, like the Grinch and Rudolph and Frosty and the Nightingale. Everyone's like, wait, what was that last one again? And I'm like, the stop motion thing with the Emperor of China getting a Nightingale. And they're all like, you lost me.
As soon as you mentioned stop motion, I had these wild flashbacks of last Christmas when Michael made me watch Claymation Christmas.
Will Vinton's, okay, yes. The oldest, so I am looking at this Emperor's Nightingale on the internet right now, a 1949 Czechoslovakian stop motion animated film, who in the American dub narrated by none other than Boris Karloff. So, like, well done, Mike. I love people. Everybody, I think, has this like one obscure Christmas special that they're the only family that ever experienced these things. And for me, it was Will Vinton's Will Vinton's Christmas Carols. Will Vinton was the guy who invented claymation. He owns the copyright on the phrase claymation, and it was a half hour special of his stop claymation figures singing Christmas carols. And the only thing that people will recognize is he was the guy who created the California Raisins. And the last of the songs is the California Raisins doing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. But it is a crazy special. I think it aired twice in like 85 and 86. And when DVDs first became a thing, I bought a DVD that had it and an Easter and a Halloween special that I never knew existed. And I keep it. And it's the like one obscure thing from my childhood that I will watch every Christmas, just because in my brain, when I hear certain Christmas carols, I think of that damn claymation version more than I think of anything else.
It was terrifying.
So to that question of like, what is our foundational things? I love finding new things to embrace. And the most recent, like blatantly Christmas thing that I really dug was Arthur Christmas.
So good.
The Aardman, Aardman can do no wrong. But I'm interested in what are more recent entries into the holiday canon that you have really embraced?
Polar Express, 100%. The bells, like taking a nighttime train ride, getting the cocoa, musicals. It is a large combination. Tom Hanks, a digitized version of Tom Hanks.
Horrifyingly dead-eyed Tom Hanks.
It is a combination of all of my interests. I cried. I laughed a whole lot. I was very happy. I also drank hot chocolate. And then 2 years ago, I did it on the Waterloo Central Railway, which is the fact that that can be a thing to take people in their tradition out of their homes and into the community and do something as a community, I think is such a unique offering. And I was like, we were raised on dinner theater. Like my first foray into a Christmas carol was at a dinner theater. So like, I love stuff like that because it's so immersive and you really get to kind of feel like you're part of the story. And that takes me back to like that one staple of Christmas and holiday films, that there needs to be magic involved. Like Christmas, we talk a lot about how societally, we talk a lot about how Christmas is for kids because it's filled with magic. Well, no, Christmas is for me because it's filled with magic, and Christmas is for everybody because it's filled with magic, and it gives you that like warm, fuzzy feeling inside. If you are someone who has positive memories of the holidays, like I think that's always a good thing to kind of remember. So yeah, like the Polar Express, 100%. It is my new. I think what came out.
It is a 2004 film. It is almost 20 years old.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say Arthur Christmas is a really strong entry. It's also like a low-key indictment of the tech industry, which I kind of like. I think that's a really good one. Another one that I really liked, the kids watched last year, which I think is really new. I'm just looking it up here. Klaus, which was it's an animated film. It's about like a postal worker who gets assigned to this really remote island and finds like an old toy maker who like is a recluse on the island because he's lost his family, and it turns out to be like a Santa Claus type guy.
It's on Netflix.
It is on Netflix, yeah. It's really good. I think it was premiered on Netflix, and I thought that was a really strong new entry into that field. And I'm very curious. I haven't seen it yet. I think it got okay reviews, but it just seemed like it was going to be like the kind of film I would dig, because I really like Serendipity and Love Actually and things. Was the one that came out, I can't remember the name now, with Emilia Clarke and what's his name from Crazy Rich Asians.
Oh, that's right.
That came out just before the pandemic.
It was like, yeah, it was like last year, I think. Right. Yeah. And I forget what it's called now, but anyways, I haven't seen it yet, but I was like, you know, like any Christmas rom-com, it got mediocre reviews, and I was like, well, yeah, but I feel like everyone's gonna give a mediocre, like, who's given a 4-star review to a Christmas rom-com,
yeah,
ever?
Yeah,
they all get trashed, and I still like them, so I feel like it's gonna be my kind of jam.
Have either of you seen Noelle with Anna Kendrick?
No,
but I love it.
That was very good.
That was a launch. That was the, like, one of the launch movies for Disney Plus.
Yes,
which was a weird choice to launch with, but
it was because it was, you know, no Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving time, just before the pandemic. But it is. I love Anna Kendrick. I think that she is absolutely hilarious.
Yes,
and it is just a well written movie.
Is that Bill Hader plays Santa Claus or something?
He plays her brother.
Oh, right.
Who is taking over for their dad.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's witty. It's got Shirley MacLaine in it too.
I like it when people play with the formulas of especially Santa Claus movies. I really like, because I feel like after the 80s, there were so many almost unbearably earnest Santa Claus movies, and then in the 90s you get obviously The Santa Claus, and then you get Elf, which has, I think, you know, whatever else you'll say about Elf, I think Ed Asner as surly Santa Claus is one of the best depictions of Santa Claus in a film. And everyone hates it, but Fred Claus, starring Vince Vaughn, where Paul Giamatti plays Santa again as a surly kind of like misanthrope character. I like a cranky Santa is what I am discovering about myself.
How do you feel about Futurama Santa?
Oh yeah,
where Santa's again, like a murderous robot.
Once again, John Goodman bringing real depth to Murderbot Santa. Big fan.
Do you guys remember? You might, you know, I'm a little older than you guys. So do you remember Santa Claus the movie? With Dudley Moore and yes. John Lithgow, David Huddleston played Santa, where like the, you know, Dudley Moore is like an elf who decides to like branch out on his own, and he brings like the magical candy cane recipe to New York or whatever. And
so I grew up in at the bottom of a hill, and at the top of the hill was a gas station that had a limited number of VHSs that you could rent, and two of those we were only allowed to rent at Christmas. One was Santa Claus the movie with Dudley Moore, and the other one was Comet, which is the movie the reindeer gets befriended by a young girl.
Wait, is it Comet or Prancer?
Is it Prancer?
Prancer.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, fair. It's an easy
mistake. Clearly, that movie had a lot of effect. I actually don't remember anything about Prancer, but I remember an awful lot about Santa Claus the movie, because that was also John Lithgow's run of the 80s, where he was like the evil businessman when they couldn't get Dabney Coleman to play the evil businessman.
I love it, man. Yeah, that was another one that I had a big effect on me as growing up, because it was always on TV, and I think again we had it on VHS taped somewhere. Yeah.
So is Jack Frost a Christmas movie for you?
Oh, Michael Keaton as the snowman.
Yeah.
And is it the sequel where they bring in Martin Short as, or what?
No, the Santa Claus with Martin Short as Jack Frost.
As Jack Frost. Okay, I'm mixing the two up. But yeah,
I mean, if Hollywood wants a free idea, Jack Frost, the cinematic universe, where it's just every actor who has ever played Jack Frost in an epic battle. That's something that I'm sure someone would pay $5 to see.
I like it. Yeah, that's a good one. You know, I mean, another one that came up, I guess, on the Twitter thread was The Family Man, right, with Nick Cage. And that's like a good family one. Like there's that whole like kind of group of family kind of Christmas movies that are really good, like The Family Stone, The Santa Claus, The Family Man.
The Santa Claus, though, if we're talking in relation to family, like Tim Allen's The Santa Claus was one of the first great depictions of a mixed family co-parenting. Mm-hmm. Because in the 90s, you never really saw that. It was always mom and dad aren't together anymore. They hate each other. And you get a little bit of that in the first movie, like there's some tension there. But in the Santa Claus 2 and the Santa Claus 3, like mom is 100% on board with getting her ex a partner and seeing his happiness and seeing him be like a fully satisfied human being. And that is so refreshing. And even still in a lot of movies, you don't see like confident co-parenting. And like, that's just always nice to see.
It's funny because the only other one that springs to mind is the Ant-Man series, which is also has a very confident set of co-parents. So.
Yeah, I mean, that could be like a whole other episode, but no, that's an interesting insight though, because I would agree. Like it is one of the early examples of that where it's showing divorce in a not totally negative, like kind of hostile, like, you know, Kramer versus Kramer style light. Right.
And I think that's very 90s of like, this is a social norm. Now we have to like normalize it in the culture as well. So let's put in some positive reinforcement.
So one last question for me, you know, coming around to this, like sort of the new entries in the thing, how do we feel about the Christmas Chronicles? Have you guys seen it? How do you feel about swaggery Kurt Russell, very animated, lively Santa?
Yeah. Cool Santa. I don't know. Kurt Russell is a good Santa at his age now.
Yeah, which is nothing I would have ever called. I mean, I am on record as being a Kurt Russell fan. I will watch Kurt Russell do anything. But even 10 years ago, if you had said that Kurt Russell will make a great Santa Claus, I would have said, I don't understand the words that just fell out of your mouth. And yet here we are. But I think that also speaks to the fact that Kurt Russell is one of the most diverse actors out there, and he can pull anything off. And also that man can grow spectacular facial hair. The fact that his Santa Claus beard is just his facial hair is all the reason you need. Yeah, fine. If you can grow that, you are welcome to the role.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it was controversial, right? Cause some people really didn't like his take on Santa as this kind of like, you know, smart talking, you know, I sing in a rock band, you know, very animated kind of thing. Like, I don't know. There were some people who were like, no, this doesn't work for me. I don't know how I feel about it. Like, I think the movie was good. It was interesting. Cause like there was this element of these kids processing grief a little bit. You know, and then that kind of picks up in the second one where they're like, you know, their mother is like in a new relationship or whatever. And
my Santa will always be Richard Attenborough in the 1994 Miracle on 34th Street. Like that is my definition of Santa Claus. He's got the mustache, he's got the beard, he's got the voice. He's soft and yet he's kind and he's empathetic and he's not creepy and weird. And it's just like that. Miracle on 34th Street is another set of movies that we could spend plenty of time talking about. But it's just like, that is to me the epitome of a Christmas film. It is perfect from front to back. And then if you look at the 1994 version in particular, even more perfect. Richard Attenborough. The girl from Matilda. What's her name? Mara Wilson.
Mara Wilson, yeah. I love Mara Wilson.
I should know better. I very much enjoy her. And
Elizabeth Perkins is the mom.
Yeah, yep. Allison Janney is randomly in that movie as well, just like as a woman walking by. it's so good.
It is good, although there was always this part of me, because it came so close to Jurassic Park, I was like, oh, that's what John Hammond did to get out of the media. He went undercover as Santa. I was like, no one will come out. The lawyers will never find me here. I did love, though, I will agree, yeah. I mean, Miracle on 34th Street is, I agree. It's probably like up there as much as you're going to find a perfect kind of Christmas film.
Yeah.
Because it does have all those things, right? There's a bit of magic. There's that really family thing. There's the right tension around, and especially of that era, like there's that tension around what is a family, mm-hmm. in that movie, right? Like what does family mean? It's got the corporate greed of, like, you know, the commercialization of Christmas versus the pure spirit of Christmas. Elements like there's everything kind of works in that moment in that film. And Richard Attenborough is so great, right? Anyways, well, this was great. I think this was a really fun episode to do. I'm glad we got to talk about holiday movies.
I just hope that everybody is like safe and in their homes, watching holiday movies, because think of all the holiday movies you can get through between Christmas Eve and New Year's Day. Instead of going and having large family celebrations or going to awkward work Christmas parties where you're probably going to get COVID because you don't know what the behaviors of Janice and James are. So
legit.
That's my hot take. No, this has been so fun. I love talking about holiday films. I don't know a whole lot about movies, but I know that I like Christmassy ones. So this has been great.
No, thank you so much for being on the show. We really love it, and it's been awesome to have you here. Where can people find you and keep up to date on what you're doing?
People can find me largely on the Twitter. I am abeard07, and that's where you'll typically find polls and requests for information and suggestion, cute dog photos, and my hot takes on the happenings that are in Kitchener-Waterloo. I'm really glad that my nepotism got me on the show early. I appreciate that.
I love it. Well, Clark can be found on Twitter and Instagram at The Library Clark. I can be found on Twitter at Mikey_Pereira. The show can be found on those platforms at Mid Credit Scene and on Facebook as Mid Credit Scene Podcast. Our theme music is The Show Must Be Go by Kevin MacLeod. Our logo design is by John Johnston. You can find his amazing work at bareface.ca. Mid-Credit Scene Podcast can be heard every month on Midtown Radio, broadcasting from the Island of Misfit Toys in Waterloo Region, and can be found anywhere where you get your podcasts.